couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films No Time to Die, VHS 94, and The Guilty. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Space Jam, A New Legacy, Little Vampire, and Elvira's Haunted Hills. Ooh. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Venom won the box office with an incredible $90 million, which is unheard of generally around this time of year, but it's also unheard of in the pandemic. It was the highest pandemic opening weekend. I mean, excluding the fact that Black Widow made a whole ton of money on the Disney Plus service, I don't like to separate those. I like to point out that Black Widow made like $150 million its opening weekend with people watching it, whether it was in the theaters or at home. But Venom, not to take anything away, even though it was a garbage movie, it did quite well. I saw somebody point out on Twitter, they said, look, don't use this as a blanket. Movies are back, theaters are back, and everything's back to normal. The thing is, Venom and Free Guy, these movies that are doing well in the theaters, they have these built-in demographics of people that are going to go to the theaters, and they're not too concerned about staying at home for not even just for the pandemic reasons, but just for convenience sake. These are tailor-made for the demographic in the audience of people that want to go out. So that doesn't mean things are going back to normal. I don't think things are necessarily. I think things have changed. Pandemic or no, you could snap your fingers and be done with a pandemic right now. And I think you still have entire demographics that have been conditioned over the last 2 years to be, hey, I'll wait for it to come to streaming. But then the other thing that's interesting is the Addams Family 2 came in second with a very respectable $17.5 million. And that's really good considering that doesn't even count the premium video on demand of $20 per pop to watch it at home. So again, you've got this certain demographics that are still going to go to the theaters, but that does not mean it's for everybody. And that does not mean that all movies are going to fit into a theatrical release, but you had a relatively decent run. Now we'll see what happens with No Time to Die and then Dune coming up later. These are movies people and the fans of have been waiting for, you know, sometimes a year or more. The next piece of news I want to hit really isn't news, but it's a discussion I've seen going on. There's a series on Netflix called Squid Game, and I've heard of it. I've not seen it. My kids, my two oldest sons have watched it, and they're big fans. It's a Korean drama, is science fiction-y thing. I don't even know what it's about. I haven't watched it, and the thing is, it is literally the most watched show around the world right now. It's got fans in all these different countries. And it's a Korean production, so it's in Korean. Apparently, because it's on Netflix and you have different options for audio and subtitles, there are some people that are choosing to watch the dubbed version of Squid Game. And that caused people online to lose their mind. People on Twitter are like, oh, no, you should watch the subtitle version. And look, this is nothing new. I've dealt with this for years. In fact, there was once, this was like 10 years ago or more, somebody recommended a movie to watch. I think it was some French horror film. And I watched it, and I mentioned on Twitter to this person, I said, I'm watching it. I'm watching the dub version. He's like, oh, no, no, you must watch the subtitle version. You'll get so much more out of the original words. And I'm like, I don't really want to because I'm sort of multitasking right now. Oh, but no, you're not really watching it if you're not watching the original version. And so I said, oh, yeah, okay, I changed it. I didn't. It doesn't matter. This stupidity of gatekeeping and virtue signaling because you watched a movie with the original words in it, it's still the same movie. there's this insane attitude that it's like, oh, you're not a real fan if you haven't watched it with the original language means so much. It is not up to you how somebody else enjoys watching something. And putting dubbing and subtitling and different languages on it only opens it up to bigger markets. I mean, I got a friend of the show who is blind. And so what he does is he uses audio descriptive. There's a lot of people who don't know that this is available. You can listen to him. You hear the whole soundtrack and you hear the richness of the soundtrack and they describes the action that happens on screen so you can enjoy the movie. That doesn't mean you didn't enjoy the movie. I don't get to choose how you watch a movie. And that's the problem with fandom right now. If you're a fan of Squid Game, you should be happy that enough people are watching. It doesn't matter whether you've watch the dubbed version or the subtitle version. Just be happy that other people like what you like. You don't get to choose how they like it. It's personal preference. Anyways, let's move on. That's just my rant for this week. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Licorice Pizza, which sounds terrible. Not the movie, but the concept of any food like that. But that is coming to theaters on November 26th and opening wide on Christmas Day.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair.
I met the girl I'm gonna marry one day.
But her friend is nowhere to be seen.
So how'd you become such a hotshot actor?
She walks through her
I'm a showman. That's what I'm meant to do.
Do you know who I am?
Yeah.
Do you know who my girlfriend is?
Barbara Streisand?
Barbara Streisand.
Sand.
Sand, yeah, like sands. Like the ocean, like beaches.
Barbara Streisand?
No, like Streisand.
Sand.
This is fate that brought us together.
Well, we are clearly heading into award season because this is clearly an award film. It's directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, or P.T. Anderson, who did movies like, my favorite one of his was Boogie Nights way back in the 90s. But he also did stuff like There Will Be Blood, and he did Inherent Vice. You know, let's take a look. Not a whole lot is being revealed in this story. It is just this movie that takes place in the 70s. I'm assuming it's somewhat autobiographical to P.T. Anderson because he grew up, I believe, in the San Fernando Valley, you know, in the 70s. That's how he had such an allure to the adult film industry back to make him do the movie Boogie Nights. This looks interesting. It looks better than some of the other stuff he's done recently. Like, I was not a big fan of stuff like Inherent Vice or The Master. I mean, these things were okay for what they were, but it was him exploring stuff that I was not interested in him exploring. I can go for a quirky comedy drama that takes place in the 70s. I don't know. It just might get overly quirky. We'll see. I'm sure I'll get plenty of chances to see that as we roll into award season. The next one I want to talk about is Wolf. No, it's not a remake of the movie with Michelle Pfeiffer and Jack Nicholson. It is another film that's in theaters on December 3rd.
Once there was a place in the woods where they sent people who didn't fit into the real world.
Welcome, Jacob.
Species identity disorder can be cured so that a person who thinks themselves an animal can resume a happy, healthy, and rewarding life.
I want to do it. It's the best thing for everyone.
You're all gonna end up wonderful human beings.
This was a TIFF movie, the Toronto International Film Festival, and it's very clear what the analogy is, being instead of animal dysmorphia, body dysmorphia. And even just from the trailer, I'm certainly getting the feel that they're doing a parallel to, you know, conversion therapy and the trans community and that sort of stuff. But it's put in a almost otherworldly type of setting. This might be interesting. It just depends on how heavily they lean into the analogy. It does star Lily Rose Depp, which does not make me care about the movie anymore. The thing is, aside from her having a attractive heroin chic look and being Johnny Depp's daughter, I don't think she's a good actor. Everything I've seen her in, she's just sort of stood there like a deer in the headlights. So this, I'm like, well, you know, this is probably going to be a dud to watch her on screen because she can't act her way out of a paper bag aside from the fact of having Depp as the last name. But we'll see. Maybe it'll be good. Maybe she'll do a good job. I've seen stranger things. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about VHS 94 and The Guilty.
Boys and girls of every age. strange. Wouldn't you like to see something strange?
Come with us and you will see. This is our town of Halloween.
Two Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's start things off with a horror movie, VHS 94. It's available exclusively on Shudder, and it's the latest in the series of VHS movies. This horror anthology features a selection of stories from the year 1994 captured on videotape.
Police, search warrant!
Do not touch anything.
Could be no one left alive in here.
Do I just press the button?
That's the red button.
Just press it.
I assume they're paying extra for this.
Yes.
This is a remarkable story.
Hello?
Compression technology, the veggie masher turns your vegetables into a tasty, mouth-watering paste.
There have been three other VHS movies. It did VHS, VHS 2, and VHS Viral, which it's been a while. It's been about 6 or 7 years since they did those, because those came out in pretty rapid succession. And I'm a huge sucker for anthology movies anyways. I remember growing up with stuff like Creepshow and watching the old Amicus horror movies. I mean, I love that concept. Part of the thing with anthology movies is if you get to a clunker of a story, you just have to wait 20 minutes and you'll get to a new story. So if there's one you don't particularly like, you should get to a better one, or at least you get another shot in the next one. But I also think there's an efficiency to short films that don't get explored enough, and this is a great way to distribute short films in a larger picture. Now, in this one, the wraparound story is the SWAT team is raiding what they think is a drug den, but they find people mesmerized by televisions and, you know, tore their eyes out and stuff like that. Horrible, you know, violent stuff, because this is definitely, I don't think this is unrated, but it's definitely R-rated content or more. And then they find these videotapes, and of course, we edit together the videotapes of multiple stories. And each story is a little bit different, but there is one that's an Indonesian movie that it feels a little more modern in the sense of some of the technology they use and the camera that they use to film it. But that one is actually really interesting because of the level of body horror it evokes, and it goes completely bonkers. I mean, it goes from just a slightly disturbing movie to this all-out crazy violent action movie. And I can appreciate the design of the movie from a choreography perspective, because it takes place in 1994. They do one about a militia. And of course, that was around the time of the Oklahoma City bombing, and militias were very much on people's mind. It's affecting and talking about the politics of the day, you know, Clinton, and, you know, he was president at the time. And it involves, they're using, let's just call it a new version of a weapon that they want to use. And it's a neat little movie. I found that one weirdly humorous, but also pretty visceral and well put together. But I love these anthology movies. I love being able to watch several different ideas and stories, and you can really force an efficiency of this. And so, the VHS movies have been fun. Some have been better than others. I think that there's always a mixed bag when you come to an anthology series, especially giving them to different directors. I mean, this is different than Creepshow, where they're all written by Stephen King and directed by George Romero. These are all done by different filmmakers, but it's worth checking out. If you have Shudder, it's on Shudder exclusively, so you're going to have that horror movie service to enjoy, and I'm sure at some point it's going to end up on VOD if you do not have the Shudder service. But for the price of the VOD, you can probably get Shudder for a month and at least watch it this month. Anyways, I'm going to have to say that VHS 94 rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to a movie. It's a little bit older. It's about a week old, and it's The Guilty, which is on Netflix right now. It's directed by Antoine Fuqua. Jake Gyllenhaal stars as a cop on desk duty after a public incident who tries to save a kidnapping victim from his desk at the 911 switchboard.
911, this is emergency operator 625.
I have a woman who's been abducted.
What are we looking for?
A white van.
That's not enough.
Come on!
Mommy?
Man,
just talked to your mommy. She's going to be okay.
You promise?
I promise. You have air support available?
Negative. Air support is grounded due to fire weather.
There is a scared little girl whose mother has been abducted.
I need a better location.
I'll get it.
How will you get it?
There's actually a lot of things going on in this movie that I find interesting. The first one is, I believe this was shot during the pandemic. This was designed to socially distance the actors. I don't see anybody get within 6 feet of anybody else in this, because they're at this big operations board. And so even though they have multiple people in there, you know, even the person closest to them is physically 6 to 10 feet away. And most of it is Jake Gyllenhaal on the phone. And you'd think, you know, gosh, how do you do that? But, you know, they do that all the time. I mean, if you have a compelling story and you've got a compelling actor and you got enough stuff going on in the actual story, you can make an entire movie about one person just sitting in a room, which is essentially what this is. And the backstory of this is Jake Gyllenhaal is a cop who was involved in a shooting incident, and he's getting ready to go to court about it the next day. For some reason, they put him in 911. I don't know if they would. There's a certain amount of setup in this movie that I question, because he's a terrible 911 operator. You know, the 911 operator needs to be empathetic and needs to be no nonsense, and they need to do what they do. And he's there scolding the people. Like, when somebody calls in, he's like, oh, did you take drugs? Well, I don't know. You shouldn't take drugs. Well, that's not what you want to hear from the 911 operator. You want to get an ambulance to him, and then you can send him to therapy afterwards. But it also shows the different levels of help that take place in a massive municipality. He's approaching it like a cop. I want to fix this problem. I want to get the bad guy right away. Well, that's not the job of the 911 operator. The 911 operator is there to talk to the person and direct the services to wherever this is. And in this sense, he's taking some shortcuts or trying different things and, you know, calling in favors to try and solve this crime on the street and take care of something with very little knowledge of it. And it shows that this may not always be helpful, and not just in the immediacy of the act, but if there's a crime going off, there's an actual criminal action, and you meddle with finding information, or you cut a corner, or you do something not by the book, you can eventually open it up to having certain things thrown out. So right now there's a huge conversation going on about police and sometimes things not being handled well in the community, and whether there's a better way to handle certain calls and that sort of thing. And I don't care what side of the issue you come from, you should come at this with an open mind. Now, if you're somebody that's like, I'm not going to have anyone complaining about anything or accusing anybody of anything whatsoever, or buys and blue or infallible, and I'm never going to say that they do anything wrong, blah, 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 pump the brakes and watch this movie. I think what it does is, first of all, it removes the racial aspect of it completely. And it shows that the police are just one segment of what the municipal authorities have to do. And if you don't follow things up a certain way, it can cause problems. And I think some of the things that percolate to the top in here, I think, are very interesting. Now, it's based on a German movie, so I don't know how much they had to strain to fit into a Los Angeles reality, or maybe it was Danish. It's a foreign film, so it was dealing with a different government. But, you know, I found this interesting, a great performance by Jake Gyllenhaal. It's worth checking out, especially for the national conversation that's going on for a different approach to it. So I'm going to have to say The Guilty kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about No Time to Die. Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the new film, the big movie of the weekend, the one that everybody's been talking about for, gosh, 2 years now, and that is No Time to Die. James Bond is dragged back into MI6 to stop a criminal mastermind from unleashing the ultimate weapon on the world.
We used to be able to get into a room with the enemy. Now they're just floating in the ether.
When her secret finds its way out, it'll be the death of you.
Oh my God. Target enough people.
Number of people become the weapon.
is he?
James, you don't know what this is.
I know that sounded like every single James Bond movie that's ever been made. But that's, I mean, here's the thing. I could write about four different blurbs on what this movie's about, and they'd all be accurate. It's a real mixed bag, this James Bond movie. It's got so much crammed into it, there's no efficiency whatsoever in this film. And I don't necessarily blame the director, because he's basically trying to do two different things. On one hand, he's trying to make a James Bond movie that will service the fans, it'll have the gadgets and the action and the girls and the explosions. But at the same time, he's trying to wrap up this overarching storyline that's been going on since Casino Royale in 2006. And those movies are constantly in conflict with each other in this movie. For example, Rami Malek plays the bad guy in there. And he's a great actor, and he's given some interesting stuff, but there's a period in this movie where I'd say for a good hour, 20 minutes, he doesn't even appear. He's not the focus at all. And then suddenly they're like, oh yeah, we got this bad guy who's disfigured like every other Bond villain. Okay, just as a Bond movie, it's fine, but there's a lot of stuff crammed into it. And in a way, I think they're trying to make On Her Majesty's Secret Service what that became known as. Because most people, when they talk about how much they love On Her Majesty's Secret Service, they could care less about Telly Savalas' Blofeld and the him in this Swiss chalet banging every single woman who's there. And they forget how lousy George Lazenby is as Bond. They love the Diana Riggs story. And they're like, oh, it was great. But that's really only like about 20 minutes of the movie. And then it impacts weirdly strong the ending of the film. And this movie, he's still pining over Vespa. And it's, oh, Vespa, I have to go visit your grave. And I mean, it's overdone and overwrought. And I get it. There's trauma there. But it's at times jumping to weird conclusions. And I'm saying this without being spoilery on this. This is the thing. This is the other thing. This has taken so long to make. It's been 6 years since Spectre. The only other time ever that it's been that long, it was slightly longer by a couple months, was after License to Kill in 1989 and then didn't get restarted until 1995 when they made GoldenEye. This wasn't even because of bankruptcy. This is just they're dragging their feet. And 6 years waiting on a... I mean, my God, Sean Connery's run was only, what, 10 years? Sean Connery only played Bond for like 9 years, 10 years. And the time between these two movies is more than half that. So I feel like the movie's trying to be everything to everyone. And, you know, if that's, and I guess that's good because no matter who's going to go see this movie, whether you're an old school Bond fan and you want to see the action and the guns and the girls and everything, you're going to get that. But if you're a new Bond fan who, I didn't like the movies until I thought Skyfall was pretty good. If you're one of those fans, then you're going to get all the character development in that. But it feels too long at times and bloated. Like the opening action sequence, you know, usually those things are relatively lean. It's just a real quick action sequence or a tease to start a thing. My God, there's an entire movie before the music starts, you know, so it's an overfilled Bond movie. And in that sense, it's kind of a masterpiece in a certain way that it's able to juggle all of that and make the movie work. Cause it does work, but it's not a great movie. And what made Skyfall work so well is they were just starting to get into these issues of Bond and his psyche. Well, that's always easy to start. It's like starting a TV series. It's really easy and it's great when you're developing all this stuff, but then to kind of make it all make coherent sense at the end, you end up with something like the end of Game of Thrones. There's so many traps laid through Skyfall and then a bunch of them inspector and they gotta spring all the traps and realize everything at the end. And it gets very complicated. Overall, it's not bad. I watched it. It does run really long. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes, but I mean, it's serviceable as a Bond movie. It's fine. It's not the best Bond movie. It's not lean. It goes on. And I'm not a big fan of Lea Seydoux's character anyways. I thought she was always disposable inspector. But somehow she's like, I mean, Eva Green in Casino Royale was quite good. And partly because that character came right out of the original book. But then they created Lea Seydoux's character, and her character's just blah. You know, she's pretty, and she has a tie to some nastiness in her past. But I mean, I didn't get the emotional connection here. And they throw so much at you, and they have to wrap up so many things that it's exhausting. And there are people who I've talked to who've said, well, it does things you've never seen before. And I'm like, yeah, no, it does everything you've seen before. Everything that is in this movie, you've seen before. Maybe not in a Bond film. It's not unpredictable at all. Everything that happens is not a surprise. But still, like I said, as a Bond movie, it works. It's serviceable. It's enjoyable. It is not the Avengers Endgame of the Bond universe. Regardless of whether it came out now or if it came out back in April of 2020 when it was supposed to, it's still going to be just a bloated Bond movie. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks, but your mileage is going to vary.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Wanted to save a little bit of time here at the end to talk about what's up next for James Bond, because they've advertised this very heavily as this is the final Daniel Craig movie. So we all know they're going to recast Bond and reboot the series after this. There's some people who say they should get rid of him completely, which I don't think they will. Bond is too much of a moneymaker. It's too much of an established franchise. You know what would be an interesting TV series? Is call it The Children of Bond. Because he just banged everybody on the planet. You might as well have all these kids, and they're the kids of James Bond, and he wouldn't even show up in there. It's just they either find each other or they're doing different things. But that would be an interesting TV series that you could do that could support the movies. But I think they should still make the movies. Black, white, I don't care what kind of Bond. You could just get somebody who's good as Bond. You know, people have talked about Idris Elba. He's starting to get a little long in the tooth. But I could still see him as James Bond. But I don't want you to just say, we are going to have a black James Bond. Get somebody who's good as James Bond. Now, there's been one thing that people have been talking about. Should we have a female James Bond? No. Well, why? Are you a sexist? Are you a misogynist? I'm like, well, that's like saying, well, we need to have a male Wonder Woman. If you want a female James Bond, just make your own James and take the woman who plays 007 in this one, just make her own movie. Give her her own franchise. I don't care. Heck, you can just splinter it off and have multiple characters. They were talking about doing a movie with Halle Berry after Die Another Day. Fine, do that. Make your own female spy. You don't have to change the character at its core. That's just at that point, and I also think that's ultimately stunt casting and people just roll their eyes at, and you know, it's going to be like the female Ghostbusters became known as the female Ghostbusters, not as a good Ghostbusters movies, and there's a reason for that. I mean, I'd love to see them do more James Bond movies, but I want to see them go back to the way they were. It's this business of spending $250 to $300 million in a movie that has to make $1 billion worldwide and spending 5 years to do a movie, it's stupid. Go back to the way they were, where they're a one and done, just a spy story, a procedural spy story that we had in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and make it a big action movie. You fund it with product placement. You know, like, I think it was Tomorrow Never Dies or The World Is Not Enough was a $125 million budget, and they had $115 million in product placement. Do that and make a Bond movie for $10 million and just churn them out and have some fun with it. Is it better to have a movie that costs $300 million and makes $1 billion every 5 or 6 years, or have three movies that each cost about $100 million to make and have them each make $400 or $500 million? I think that works out better in the long run. You know, go back, make it a series, what Bond was originally meant to be. That's what I'd like to see. But who listens to me anyways? I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Space Jam, A New Legacy, Little Vampire, and Elvira's Haunted Hills. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. We don't have any more movie reviews to do because the only big movie is Bond. Everyone got out of the way for that one. This is the time where I talk about some home cinema options. And this week I ended up getting several Blu-rays that needed to be covered. And so I figured, let's just cut straight to the chase and start talking about the DVDs and Blu-rays that are available in the Home Cinema Roundup. The first one on the list is Space Jam, A New Legacy. That is the big one of the week in terms of new content. LeBron James is digitized into the Warner Brothers server by a rogue algorithm where he has to play the ultimate basketball game with the Looney Tunes.
I am the king of this domain.
This is the serververse.
What'd you do to my son?
Where's Dom?
The only way you're getting your son back is if you and I play a little basketball.
I'm a cartoon?
Meep. What's up, Doc?
I need to assemble an elite team to help get my son back.
I know what you're looking for. A dream team.
Welcome to the Space Jam.
I, of course, talked about this when it came out this summer, and I gotta say I enjoyed it. I'm not a basketball fan. Honestly, outside of LeBron James, I don't think I could name a single NBA player. I am that disconnected with, well, sports in general, but I just don't care about basketball. But I was never a huge fan of the original Space Jam. I mean, I had nothing against Michael Jordan. I just felt it was really a stretch for a movie. I mean, yeah, it has Michael Jordan playing basketball with Looney Tunes. But like the Looney Tunes are in the Earth and the aliens want to play basketball. I mean, the whole premise seemed weirdly absurd. This one, I think, actually slides into it a little bit better. I think it not organic, but it feels like a more pragmatic, real, in quotes, storyline. And LeBron James, I think, does a fine job. Yeah, he's not an actor by trade. He plays basketball, but I think he does well on screen. He certainly does serviceable. I have seen people who are not actors do an acting job. And for as much as he appears on screen, I think he does a fine job with this. And, you know, who knows? Maybe he could have a nice little career after, you know, he has to retire. But this is a cute movie. I have to say, I really enjoyed it. I liked this film because of the looniness and the craziness. And the big thing also was the background cameos of all these different characters from Warner Brothers history. Watching the basketball game is more fun watching the people in the stands trying to figure out all the different properties that are being represented there. And there are some that I don't remember the name, but I recognize. Like there was this purple hippo from a floating dirigible or something like that. And I recognized him, but I didn't know who they were from, as opposed to saying, oh, hey, there's Grape Ape and Scooby-Doo and everything. But I thought this was fun. I think it has a nice little message. And yeah, it's corny and it's cheesy and it's completely absurd, but it looks great. And I had a fun time watching it. And then the Blu-rays kind of lean. There's four behind the scenes featurettes that are less than 10 minutes long each. So you can watch different stuff, but you know, it's your basic, hey, this is how we put it together. And then there's a handful of deleted scenes that are kind of interesting, but of course, like any animated film, it's a mix of finished product and animatics and temp animation. But still, I'm going to have to say Space Jam, A New Legacy kind of rocks on Blu-ray.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next DVD, and that is Little Vampire. This French cartoon follows a 300-year-old vampire and its mother on the run from a villain from across the sea of time.
I've been 10 years old for 300 years, and for 300 years I've been bored stiff. I'm fed up with being stuck in here.
You can't say that.
I don't care. I'm leaving this house.
He's lost his marbles.
I want to be treated like the other kids.
Where are you going?
To school. I want to meet friends my own age. But with a student's name in it. Michael Duffin.
Who are you?
A vampire.
And I want to be your friend.
Like I said in the description, I believe it's a French movie. It's a French story. And that gives a different sort of sensibility to it. It does not feel like a typical American animated film. And that's a nice, refreshing thing to have now and then. I think that's kind of neat. I remember when I watched, like, you know, movies like Ernest and Celestine and stuff like that, stuff that ends up getting nominated for the Academy Award. Those things are kind of neat to watch just because it's a different perspective. You don't get the same jokes. You don't get the same characters and you don't get the same archetypes that you do in an American film. And I think that's kind of refreshing. Little Vampire is a cute story. It's the kind of thing where you relate to the vampire because he was turned into the undead when he was 10, so he's perpetually 10. And his mother's a ghost, and she was fleeing a prince who had wanted to force her to marry him, and then he was going to kill her, and they were saved by a pirate ghost. So it has all these elements that kind of make a little kid go, ooh, vampires, monsters, zombies, pirates, isn't that cool? And so I'm watching this going, if I had seen it when I was like 10, I would have loved this movie. I would have gone bonkers for it. So it's a cute little film. It's available from Shout Factory Kids, and you can get it on digital platforms. It's been available since September, but now you get it on Blu-ray with a DVD combo pack. There's no special features, but you usually don't get those on a kids movie like this. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the Home Cinema Roundup with the big releases, or excuse me, the big release of the week. That is Elvira's Haunted Hills. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, stars in her second feature film from 2001, in which she visits a Romanian castle in 1851, only to discover a family out for each other's blood.
You won't be able to move. You won't be able to scream. You won't be able to take your eyes off of Elvira's Haunted Hills.
Allow me to present Elvira.
Yeah, nice meeting you too.
Elvira!
Entertainer extraordinaire.
Jeez, everybody's a critic.
A year or two ago, I watched, for the first time, I'd never seen Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, the movie that they made in the 80s, and that was a fun little romp. I mean, I've always been a fan of Elvira. I never watched her show, but I always remember her sort of existing in the horror realm since the 80s, since she was doing her show on one of the stations in Los Angeles and then became a national figure. You know, it's always fun to watch Elvira. The level of camp that Elvira brings is something that, you know, is very much to be expected. And this is her second movie, and she made this at the turn of the century. So it was a couple years. It was a good 10, 12 years after the first Elvira Mistress of the Dark movie. So it's about 20 years old, and it comes in this collector set. Obviously, you know, Haunted Hills, it's making certain body references here. But I gotta say, the thing that I appreciated most about this movie was its reverence to horror classics. They built it as a homage to the Vincent Price, Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe stories. And particularly, they talk about Pit and the Pendulum, and I know they really focus on Tomb of Ligeia. And those things evoke a level of Hammer horror as well, even though it's a totally separate company, but it has that 60s level of horror where it's more about the settings and the general idea, you know, these deep, dark, creepy castles with these weird characters that are intent on murder. But there's not a whole lot of on-screen violence in those movies. This one feels like a better spoof than stuff like Transylvania 65,000 or Saturday the 14th. This one has a little bit more of a pragmatic story and that follows a through line, but it also has a great cast. I mean, obviously Elvira's fun to watch, and there's plenty of sight gags and jokes about her jumbly bits, but you also have some great comedic actors in there and you know, people from The Groundlings, which is, you know, where Elvira technically cut her teeth as well in a lot of ways. And then, of course, they have Richard O'Brien as one of the cast members, and he's fantastic, and it's always great to see him and stuff, because he's so inevitably tied to Rocky Horror. It's nice to see him doing something that's not Rocky Horror, although he ends up having to talk about it in the special features. But the one actor I really wanted to spotlight is Scott Atkinson, who basically plays a spoof of Vincent Price, and he does a great job being a Vincent Price-type character, but without doing a direct impression of him. And I think that bodes well for the movie. I mean, it's absurd, it's silly, it's a lot of sight gags, but it has everything that you'd expect. It's a goofy, haunted house type movie, and it was shot in Romania. When you watch the special features, there's a bunch of behind the scenes stuff. There's like a making a featurette, and they actually have two of them. One that was, I believe, made right around the time it was released, and I think the other one was made closer to this time. I don't think it's brand new, but they have this retrospective. Behind the scenes stuff sometimes gets a little boring, but that stuff I found fascinating as they were talking about what it was like to shoot in Romania and some of the crazy and silly stories from the set and what they were doing to pay tribute to these Roger Corman, Vincent Price movies. So I've got to say, I enjoyed the heck out of Elvira's Haunted Hills, and not just for the reasons that you'd think. So I'm going to have to say Elvira's Haunted Hills on Blu-ray totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Also available this week on Blu-ray and DVD, you've got the entire Halloween series on 4K. That's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Halloween Kills and The Last Duel. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.